Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Ohio may not be known as the coal state, but when it comes to production, it's among the top 10 states in the country. The coal industry means jobs and cheap energy, accounting for 75% of the electricity we use in Ohio. But there are challenges. Ohio's coal industry suffered another setback last month when Murray Energy announced it would close its mine in Brilliant on the Ohio River. Joining us now to talk about Ohio's coal industry and where it's headed is Luke Popovich of the National Mining Association, the U.S. mining industry's national trade group in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the show, Luke.
Thank you for having me.
As I mentioned, coal consumption has fallen to a 20-year low. What has that meant to the coal industry in terms of revenue and jobs?
Well, it's actually meant that we are adjusting in the marketplace for two reasons. One, we have exceptionally low natural gas prices. They've never been lower, and of course, they're making things miserable not only for coal, but for renewable fuels. And those in the natural gas business are finding it very hard to make money at prices this low. Of course, consumers benefit from that, and that's all to the good. But secondly, the marketplace is something that will correct itself. I think the major problem the coal industry has is an exceptionally hostile regulatory environment from Washington. This is somewhat new. We've always, I think, made reasonable accommodations with regulations meant to improve our environmental performance. But we are now facing, I think, a much more serious problem, as you referenced in your show. So I think those are the two issues. But I think the market will correct itself as natural gas will find other markets. Both here domestically and offshore, it's seeking to export. Those prices will go up, and coal will be the beneficiary. But it's the regulatory aspect that is probably giving us our biggest headache today.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Luke Popovich. He's a spokesman for the National Mining Association. That's the U.S. mining industry's national trade group. If you have a question or comment about the coal industry in Ohio, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's talk about those new EPA regulations. What's said mostly about them is that they will have the most effect on the construction of new coal burning plants. What will the effect be on Ohio otherwise?
Well, I think one of the problems Ohio might face is that, like a lot of states, the benefit from affordable energy, affordable electricity that rely heavily on coal, the reduction of coal possibly in your future generation mix, in your future energy mix, could certainly portend higher utility bills for households and businesses. This is a very regressive tax because, of course, everyone, even the poorest people on fixed incomes, have to have electricity to heat their homes in the winter and air condition them. When those bills go up, even what may appear to some of us as a relatively modest amount, maybe $30, $40 a month, then that's going to take a big bite out of the spending of an available disposable income of a lot of households. So I think that's the main problem that consumers that in Ohio might face. There's also the employment problem that could portend. If EPA goes through with these new rules, which, by the way, would virtually banish any new coal plant from being built. Mm-hmm. Right now, coal supports about 32,000 high-wage jobs throughout Ohio, just in Ohio. And that's not just in the mines. It's in the power plants, railroads, and service companies. And these are very high-wage jobs that you don't need two or three of these jobs to support a family. These are the kind of jobs that I think Americans have been wanting and looking for, and so I think with these rules that would rule out new coal plants, you're obviously going to have a reduction in these high wage jobs going forward. They'll have to be replaced.
To what extent are the number of jobs lost related to mechanization?
I would say that today the job losses through mechanization are relatively minor compared to the job losses that are from regulation alone. We've had in the last 20, 30 years, as all industries have, we've had mechanization in the mines, underground mines and surface mines, because, as you probably know, mining is not the pick and shovel operation it was 50, 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But still, though the jobs that we do continue to create, and by the way, you know, we had sales last year in Ohio alone of $5 billion, and that was the fifth consecutive year that we've had over $1 billion annual sales in Ohio alone. That meant we were keeping jobs up, high-wage jobs up, even during the worst years of the recession. So despite mechanization, I think we're still able to create high-wage jobs, but that assumes that we're going to have an industry to create them. And if the Environmental Protection Agency has its way, that is not going to be a prospect for a lot of people seeking work in Ohio.
What? Tell me, China burns about 4 billion tons of coal a year, as much as the rest of the world combined, but
right.
It's taking steps as well to slow the growth of its coal consumption. Would that reverberate in any way in a place like Ohio, Ohio's coal-producing industry?
No, not at all. I mean, what China's talking about is a relative decline in its coal consumption. China and India together will burn enough coal in the next two decades by all the experts to keep the United States in the coal export business for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an opportunity for Ohio, not an unfortunate circumstance, because we're the only region of the world, the United States, that's not using more coal than they did 20 years ago. I mean, even Germany and Japan are using more coal today. And in Asia, where you have an industrial revolution going on, the coal consumption is through the roof. We have here in the United States, and Ohio is an example, the deepest coal reserves of any country in the world. So we're obviously positioned to serve this growing need if only the regulations will allow us to do that.
Well, that and it as deep as the coal reserves are, they get more and more expensive to
right.
get at the deeper you go, literally and figuratively.
No, that's right. And that's why you have to have mechanization. You have to have productivity enhancing mining methods in order to reduce those costs and make yourself competitive. But I think industry-wide, we're doing that.
The regulations don't have as much to do with mining of coal as they do with the burning of coal.
Right.
And Ohio has particularly dirty coal.
Well, right? I mean, it is relatively a problem compared to, say, Powder River Basin coal in Wyoming and Montana. But don't forget.
Which are the biggies, yeah.
Right, the biggies. But don't forget that the power plants in the Midwest, in the eastern coast states, since 1990, 1991, have installed scrubbers that make your Illinois Basin coal, essentially what you have in the seam in Ohio, very competitive and very environmentally responsible, because that coal is able to be burned cleanly in most of the power plants today. That wasn't the case probably so much, 10, 15 years ago.
But you're saying the new regulations make it more difficult to achieve the same. Why is that?
Well,
if they're cleaning very, very well now, what would the regulations do?
Well, the new regulations are going to make it hard for all coal producers, not just those in Ohio, because EPA is proposing a sweeping new way of reducing carbon dioxide emissions from power plants. And the way they're doing that is by insisting that any new power plant built has to have a technology that is not commercially available in order to drop their CO2 emissions down to the level that EPA wants. Well, the law does not allow them, we don't think, to create out of whole cloth a technology that doesn't exist for power plants today. They must use a technology that we can use in new power plants. And the sad part of it is, if these regulations were done more responsibly, we would be able to use the most advanced coal technologies to build these new plants, keep the jobs that we've been creating, and yet reduce these CO2, these greenhouse gas emissions, significantly. And then in 7 or 8 or 10 years, take a second look at where the technology is and use that technology to reduce them further, all the while keeping an invaluable resource that Ohio has for jobs and the economy.
How many power plants were being planned anyway? My understanding is very, very few, if any.
Well, I mean, I think what's happening is that utility companies are looking at EPA's rulemakings, and they're seeing a heavy cloud on the horizon, and they're very reluctant to commit billions of dollars in capital investment if EPA and this administration are proposing to eliminate coal.
Down the road, do you see the regulations lightening up in the long run? In other words, if the coal industry had been investing in the clean coal technology earlier on and going there itself instead of waiting for the regulations, would they be better off, or is it always going to be this heels in the, digging your heels in to fight the regulations? I mean, over the long term, the attitude seems to be that we have to clean up the coal.
Right. No, I think there's no argument that we have to clean up the coal, and there's been no argument from our industry about cleaning it up.
It's the standard.
If you look at the emissions reductions from coal-based power plants, beginning in 1970 through the last year that the government has statistics, you will find almost a 90% reduction in the emissions from coal-based power plants. What the administration, however, is proposing is a regulation that is impossible for coal plants to meet. So all we're saying is, let's continue this progress that we've seen, but not drive us out of business.
Well, I want to say thanks to you, Luke Popovich, for joining us today.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.
Luke Popovich, he's a spokesperson for the National Mining Association, the U.S. mining industry's national trade group. Coming up, we will hear from American Coalition for Clean Coal Energy and talk a little bit more about those regulations. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Coal still is a $1 billion industry in Ohio, but consumption has fallen to a 20-year low. One of Ohio's greatest challenges is the type of coal that is mined here. Joining us now to talk about how the industry is working on that is Mike Duncan. He's president and CEO of the American Coalition for Clean Coal Energy. It's a national nonprofit organization dedicated to supporting and promoting the use of coal. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ann. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
The Ohio Department of Natural Resources counts 142 coal mines in Ohio, but only about a half of them are producing coal. To what extent are the closures related to the type of coal that is mined in Ohio and the expense there is to clean it?
Well, I think it's a complicated question, and let me start with a different angle on it and then try to work back, because I'm not sure I can answer for each of the mines, because it probably at that level has something to do with the contracts that they have to provide for. utilities in the country. But if you look at 2012 as a base year, there were 1,300 electric generating units in the country, 589 power plants, and we produced about 300,000 megawatts of electricity. Since that time, we've had a total of about 59,000 megawatts that have been announced that will be retired. That's about 19% of the total coal fleet. And about 48,000 megawatts of that group, 315 of the units, were attributable in part to regulation. And in Ohio, all of yours have had something to do with regulation. There's been 7,041 megawatts that's been announced to retire at 41 different units. So a great deal of the coal reduction in Ohio and the rest of the country has come because of regulation from the EPA.
Are there viable technologies out there that could turn that around?
There are all kinds of technologies, and we've been doing this since the early 1970s. There are 15 or 16 different ways of making coal cleaner in the country, and the one that the EPA is focused on in their new source standards, which I believe will actually be a detriment to coming up with better technology, is carbon sequestration. That's where you get the carbon and put it in the ground and store it over a long period of time. And there are no commercially available plants that have successfully done that on a full scale yet. We've got the Kemper plant that is in Mississippi that hopefully will open later this year. There's a small plant in Canada and Saskatchewan that hopefully will open later this year, but it's not a demonstrated technology at this point.
What, as far as the Kemper plant goes, why was it built in the first place, and what's expected of it?
Well, it was an attempt to increase technology. You know, we've gotten better at this over the years. Mm-hmm. The $110 billion worth of investment that's been made by the industry has brought the particulate count down to about 90% now. So we're doing better, and we continue to do better. And that was an attempt by Southern Company to move the ball along. Anytime you get into new technology, you run into cost overruns and unexpected consequences. So Kemper is an experimental plant. We would hope that the next one would cost less. Kemper also is in a fortunate place in the country where they can take their CO2 and send it to the oil industry, where it can be used for fracking and production of more energy.
Are there incentives for coal plants to adopt cleaner technologies? Are there any clean technologies that have helped save the coal industry money too?
Well, over a period of time, there have been incentives, and their FutureGen that was announced and is under some construction in Illinois is part of an incentive package. And Kemper also received some federal money for this, and that's another reason that they can't be counted as a fully demonstrated project, because federal money was in that. And also in Canada, the Crown has backed the Saskatchewan plant.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Mike Duncan. He's president and CEO of the American Coalition for Clean Coal Energy. It's a national nonprofit group dedicated to supporting and promoting the use of coal. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Mike, to what extent is the industry responsible in part for where it is now because it has fought regulations for so many years instead of leading the way? It has dragged its feet.
Well, I'm not sure I accept the premise of your conclusion. I think the industry has led the way by providing low-cost, reliable electricity for the country that developed a manufacturing base second to none, and we've provided many things that have helped the country. We've also been part of the solution. The $110 billion that's been invested in the scrubbers, the baghouses, the various apparatuses that go on power plants, we've cleaned up the visibility in most cases. We've reduced the CO2, the NO2, the particulates, the mercury. So I think there has been a lot of investment over a period of time, and we'd like to be able to continue doing that. And I think one of the bad things about NSPS is that we're going to lose out on the ability of creating technology that's potentially a trillion-dollar industry for the rest of the world.
NSPS, you're talking about the regulations put forth by the recent ones put forth by the EPA.
Yes, new source standard.
What other technologies would be developed?
Well, I don't know that we know the answer to that. I think at Ohio State, you've had some technology about a different way of producing coal, of the, taking the energy out of coal. I know there are algae experiments that would take CO2 and help produce algae as a food source for the world. I think the limitation is the limitation of the ability of people to perceive this and the ability to gather capital and then do it on a commercially reasonable scale. And as with all technology, that's taken a period of time. If you think of the first cell phones, you know, they were in bags and they were bricks and they were costing several thousand dollars. And today we have for a few hundred dollars something that we can carry in our pocket. So technology improves over a period of time. And part of my problem with EPA is that they're trying to push this in too fast of a manner for the industry to actually gain benefit for consumers in the country.
Let's bring in Trent Doherty. He's Director of Legal Affairs at the Ohio Environmental Council. Trent, everybody agrees that that we want to lower our CO2 emissions. No one seems to debate that today. But is the pace of these regulations fair to the industry when the fact is we are all going to pay for them in the end? It's going to be more expensive.
The issue of CO2.
And carbon reductions is not a brand new thing that just popped up in 2008 when Barack Obama was elected president. The issue of climate change, the issue of how do we combat climate change has been going on, and the debate has been going on for a while. And this has been at the doorstep of the coal industry for decades. And the issue of clean coal, the issue of carbon capture and sequestration, was something that was on the books here in Ohio just a few 9 years ago. I can remember our organization, Ohio Environmental Council, actually working with American Electric Power and their proposed plant down in Meigs County that would have been the first coal gasification plant in Ohio, and to use carbon capture and sequestration. We would have conversations with the AEP, and they had been working on this for quite some time before then. This isn't brand new, it's just the problem is we're at a tipping point when it comes to CO2 that we need to do something about it.
But Mike Duncan, you're saying that the technology is still untested.
Well, under the law, if you agree that the Clean Air Act can regulate this, which we think it wasn't set up for that, and even Mr. Dingell, who sponsored legislation, agrees with that, but even if you say that that's a given, you have to have proven technology, and there's a definition of proven technology, and part of that is it can't be funded by federal sources. So there is not a commercially viable plant on full scale in the world that we can use to set the standard. So we're setting standards without the proven technology. And I just don't think that's right. And I think it's going to set us behind. And it's taking away a potential market for us in this country to help other countries with their CO2 emissions.
Are countries around the world adopting the same new clean technology, clean coal technology, I should say?
Well, they're attempting to. As I mentioned, the Canadian plant, and I met with that group recently in Saskatchewan, and they're not up and running yet. And there are other plants that are being proposed in different parts of the world.
Is the United States at the forefront of this?
Well, the United States could be at the forefront, but I'm afraid what's going to happen when you're not going to get new investment after these rules become final. People are not going to be willing to put money into plants because they know they can't hit the standards yet.
Well, I was talking about that earlier with Luke Popovich of the National Mining Association, and from where I sit, from what I've been looking at, it didn't look like there was going to be any investment anyways, and hasn't been for a long time.
Well, I think there's a potential for new investment in the country. Obviously, we're in a downturn with the economy in the last few years, and there's less electricity being generated. And part of that is because we've got a problem with our manufacturing sector. And if we keep raising our utility rates, that's going to just be exacerbated. I was on a utility, the Tennessee Valley Authority board, and I know that our commercial users, our manufacturer users, needed the very lowest cost of electricity in order to produce their their goods and be competitive in the rest of the world. So that's a big deal in Ohio. You've got 663,000 manufacturing workers. It's 87.2 billion part of your economy, and we certainly don't want to put that at a disadvantage.
Competition's another part of the equation. To what extent has the fracking industry, particularly in Ohio, come into play in terms of, you know, staying commercially viable?
Well, obviously, last year particularly, right, we saw a downturn in coal usage. It went down to 37% of the national electricity output. This year, it's gone back up to about 39%. And when the gas prices were extremely low, there were plants that were switching, and it made sense for the consumers at the time. But what coal gives is a reliable source of cheap electricity that keeps the lights on 24/7. You just don't use it for peaking times. And it's there. It's transportable. You can store it. It can be there for these very cold days that we have and the very warm days in summer. We can add additional electricity from other sources.
Going forward, you're saying that what the EPA has done with these regulations is it made it commercially impossible to invest in the technology that they're asking you to do. What do you do then? These regulations are out there. How do you go forward?
Well, I think that you're going to see technology being developed in other parts of the world and being proven there and then eventually sold back to the United States. I'm very optimistic that eventually we'll be building new coal plants in this country. It may not be in the next 5 years or maybe even 10 years, but I believe that we will, because I think we will figure out our economy, we'll get back on a manufacturing base, our consumer demand will increase, and that we're going to need more capacity. And we've got different entrants, and I'm an all-of-the-above person, and I think there's room for wind, and I think there's room for solar, and obviously nuclear and hydro where you can. But the base load of the electricity in the country has been carried with coal over a long period of time, and I think for the foreseeable future, it's going to continue.
Trent Daugherty, what about the different technologies? Is there any concern in the environmental community that the EPA regulations relying on these particular, you know, the sequestration technology is going to be limiting? And limiting the industry going forward?
Well, when it comes to, as you mentioned, building new coal plants, we don't see that coming. We don't see that even being on the books before these regulations were put in place. It's a Wall Street thing. It's not a Washington thing. It is the financing of these plants. We're talking about the existing plants that he's right, that have been keeping the lights on for a long time, are now 60 plus years old, and they're being shut down from Lake Erie to those on the Ohio River. Mainly because of the fact that they're old and they need to be dealt with in some way, shape, or form. And the money now is to put forth in other ways and not these old coal plants. So the technology, we're at, as I mentioned before, we're at this tipping point when it comes to CO2, and we're going to need to make a decision. And the decision now is that, you know, we need to cut carbon 50% from what these existing plants are when it comes to these new plants that come up. And, you know, right now it's the natural gas combined cycle plants that will be able to do that for baseload power. And as you know, I was here 10 weeks ago talking about oil and gas and there are issues there, but it will be extremely limiting, and I think it's a combination of financing and the fact that, you know, you're fighting regulations and have been fighting regulations for a long time, and now it's time to reap what you sow.
What about this tipping point, Mike Duncan? You talk about particulate counts down 90%. Things are so much better than they used to be. How do you view the tipping point?
Well, first, let me respond to the number of plants. There were 15 plants that were in process that had gotten to the point where they had applied for permits when the first regulation and the new source regulation came out. There are still three of those that are pending. It's obviously had an effect there, but there were coal-fired power plants in the planning stage, and you know, Sunflower in Kansas is still one of those that is pending. I take a long view at this. I believe that there is a future for coal in this country and for the rest of the world. I do believe that we will continue to find ways to improve the environment with the use of coal. I think this whole idea of shutting down the coal plants in the country is one that we should reject out of hand. Even if we closed all of our coal plants in America, that would only reduce 3% of the world's CO2 emissions, and that's would have an effect. These are government numbers of 0.03, 300ths of a degree Fahrenheit, and what effect on the sea level would be less than the thickness of a dime. So our contribution to this in the whole world is pretty minuscule, but our leadership is not, and we need to have the ability to come up with the technologies to help the rest of the world.
Is it helpful to the coal industry, say, if this is seen as an administration that is tough on coal, big on regulation, if another administration comes in with different ideas, is it helpful to the coal industry to have everything so administration oriented? Isn't some continuity over time helpful too?
Well, personally, I think that this is a legislative issue. I think that Congress should be deciding our energy policy, and I've felt that for the past 20 years. I am an all-of-the-above person, and my voting record on the TVA board would show that. So I regret that we've gotten to the point where Congress is not able to come up with the legislation and making it a regulatory matter.
And Trent Doherty, what about an organization like the Ohio Environmental Council? Is the continuity from Congress more reliable than what you're getting from an administration?
Yeah, I think our point of view is something needs to be done. And we think, I agree wholeheartedly that an all-of-the-above approach is necessary, and it's necessary now. And right now, because of Congress now and Congress from a matter of three or four previous Congresses that have been slow or absolutely opposed to any change in the way we deal with our electricity markets, in particular our energy supply, and have forced the hand of the administration to do something. We wholeheartedly support what the administration is doing, but yeah, we need to take a look and have it start with Congress and how we deal with the energy supply and where it all comes from.
So, Mike Duncan, just real quick, because we're running out of time. Trent Doherty saying Congress would be great if they would do something, but they haven't done anything, and they don't seem interested in change.
Well, I think there are lots of people in Congress who are. I think the whole procedure of Congress right now is somewhat
Well, I was going to say that. Thanks for saying it for me.
I think that's really the problem in Congress.
Right. Okay. Well, Mike Duncan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay. Thank you.
Mike Duncan, he's president and CEO of the American Coalition for Clean Coal Energy. It's a national nonprofit organization dedicated to supporting and promoting the use of coal. We'll continue our conversation with Trent Doherty when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. When it comes to electricity in the United States, coal used to be king and probably still is, at least in Ohio, but the future is unclear. Environmental groups have been at the fore of the movement to clean up the coal we burn for energy in the United States, and Ohio coal is among the dirtiest. Joining us now to look ahead is Trent Doherty of the Ohio Environmental Council. Welcome to the show, Trent.
Thank you, Ann.
So let's go backwards just a little bit and talk about the coal in Ohio. Why is it bad? Why is it dirty? What's the difference?
The difference is the sulfur content of Ohio coal. And, you know, thanks to a few decades ago, the changes in the Clean Air Act that said we need to have fewer sulfur dioxide emissions from our coal burning power plants. And for the most part, that's put the old way of doing coal burning in Ohio, using Ohio coal, essentially kept that underground. We have, as your previous guests have said, there have been technologies of power plants that have scrubbed some of the sulfur, so some of it's being used. But I think we still a few years ago, I think we were about 60% import of coal from other states, even though we do produce a lot and end up exporting the coal that we do have.
And we send our Ohio coal where?
That's a question. I haven't seen the latest trends, but you know it goes overseas. Ohio,
where they don't care.
Where essentially the sulfur content isn't part of their laws, unfortunately. And you know that's an issue that's problematic for us. That it's not just an Ohio problem. It's not just a U.S. problem, but climate change and controlling CO2 and controlling the other constituent pollutants is a global issue.
We were talking earlier about the new EPA regulations and what they're asking coal companies to do if they want to burn the coal. Tell us more about the sequestration process. You bury it?
Yeah, so it's the technology that's at least right now with the new power plant rules, if you're going to build a coal-fired power plant, in order to achieve those reductions that the Clean Air Act is saying and that the administration is saying you need to achieve, coal-fired power plants need to capture that coal, and then that is then to be put down under the earth, sequestered miles and miles under the earth. This is a technology that has been used by the oil and gas industry, actually, for enhanced oil recovery for decades, taking CO2 and putting it underground in those situations to force the oil up.
Is that the fracking that you're talking about?
It's not just for the production. It's similar to it, but it helps push out the oil that's down there and otherwise difficult to get.
Okay.
Brings it up so they can actually recover some of those oil reserves. So it's been used for quite some time. The technology to make sure that it stays down there underground and at the amounts that we're going to need to sequester if we're going to continue to build coal plants. It hasn't been tested. There are still some questions. There aren't any coal plants that have been successful in doing it. There's still a few, even in the environmental community, that are hopeful that can happen if coal is going to be part of the mix. But as I mentioned before, we're at a tipping point with CO2, so we need to really start making some changes.
If you have a question or comment for my guest, Trent Doherty of the Ohio Environmental Council, you're welcome. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Well, coal is definitely going to be part of the mix for a long time. Everyone talks about all of the above. Coal's huge. You just aren't going to replace it quickly and viably with wind or solar or any number of things. Most people agree with that.
We do need baseload power, and right now coal is our baseload default, and it probably will be for the foreseeable future. You know, I'm 35. For my lifetime, it probably will be. For my 6-year-old daughter's lifetime, maybe not. And it's an issue of really the economics in this, and mm-hmm. If you're looking at right now the power from the dirtiest bottom of the barrel coal plants right now, we're looking at 6 cents per kilowatt. If you look at energy efficiency, we're looking at 2.5 cents a kilowatt hour in Ohio. That is a dramatic decrease in not only the amount that it costs individuals, industries, companies, individuals, but it's also the cleanest source. And there's the potential for 26% of our electric source, our electric energy, to come from energy efficient technologies. This is not just turning off the lights or turning down the thermostat. This is actually putting in technologies that save us energy, can replace 26%. So this need for so much more coal is going to be dwindling and dwindling and dwindling. It's going to get to a point where it will be fine for us to look at other options, whether it be baseload options of other fossil fuels, or if it's to the point where we can actually get some of that baseload to come from other sources.
If you're not talking about flipping a switch or putting more insulation in, what are you talking about when you talk about something like a 26% increase in efficiency?
Well, we are. We're talking about that insulation, about advanced motors for industrial processing. We're talking about high-efficiency windows, doors, light bulbs. We're talking about waste energy recovery, that all those smoke and heat coming out of those smokestacks to be captured and be then used as electricity into turbines. Those are the real efficiency projects that need to be put in place and can be put in place for cheaper. And those are, I don't know if you want to get into the jobs issue, but those are where the real jobs are, the real people jobs are, real job intensive energy efficiency.
Is there such a thing as clean coal now, or are all coals, all kinds of coal, dirty, and all of it needs cleaning at some level?
All of coal needs cleaning at some level.
Ohio just has one of the
worst. Ohio has some of the dirtiest, but coal is dirty. There is, you go through the process from the mine to burning of it. There are intense processes that have to be put in place to get it to the point where it is okay under current regulations to turn into electricity. That goes from taking the coal out of the ground, quote unquote, washing it, creating these lakes of coal slurry that take this sort of toxic mix and hold it in these, what used to be streams, now are lakes of coal waste, and then shipping that over and putting it into power plants that have to be scrubbed, that have to put on limitations for mercury. Since 2011, the very first time those power plants have had to do it, to now looking at the CO2. So there's a long process to make this quote unquote clean. But if you look at energy efficiency, if you look at renewables, we're talking clean from day one.
Doug in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Doug.
Hi. My question revolves around what's happened to the earth as a result of digging this stuff up and polluting all the reservoirs, the lakes, streams, and just simply leveling mountains, mountain regions, plains. I mean, I can remember the Gem of Egypt down south, southern part of the state, and that thing was monster. I stood next to it.
The digger, you mean? Yeah.
And then as I go down to the Carolinas, we used to go to Hilton Head. We don't go that way anymore because they've just leveled everything. And because they're just taking everything away, and on top of that, people are getting sick, and that's even before they get the coal out of the ground and into the burning the power plants.
What do you mean people are getting sick?
The runoff. I don't know if you, the runoff from all the nasty byproducts of digging out this coal. It gets into those streams and waterways, and it does. I mean, and they don't, and the companies and the states don't regulate it.
Okay.
And in West Virginia and in Ohio.
Well, let's hear what Trent Doherty has to say. I mean, there's the whole process of getting it out,
your call is 100% correct, and it starts from the mining, and the problems start there, and you could even end them there, and the devastation is immense. As you said, as your caller said, there are supposed to be, since 1976, regulations in place to keep that mining safe, not only for the miners but also for the communities. But we still have legacy coal plants that are turning rivers orange from acid mine drainage. We're talking about coal slurry impoundments, these big lakes of coal waste. One in particular down in Southeast Ohio that's leaked.
A slurry leaked
mm-hmm. 9 times into the Ohio River and into Captina Creek, right downstream from it. And it's something that is real. There's real impacts that are coming even before you get to the point of actually taking it to a power plant and burning it and having the mercury, the CO2, and all those problems that come from that.
Are you satisfied with the reclamation laws that are now in place?
the reclamation laws, you know, I am satisfied that we are getting closer to the, you know, the what used to be, you know, $30 million worth of reclamation projects that needed to be done from legacy coal plants. I think DNR has moved to the point where some of those are being reclaimed. I think it's sometimes a roll of the dice when it comes to what those reclamation on current mines, what they look like, how they end up. It's, you know, some are able to be reclaimed well. Some, unfortunately, I've seen some that look like a moonscape, and it is unfortunate. And I think that it's not just something that's, again, that it's a Washington issue. It's a Columbus issue as well, trying to get those laws and regulations put in place so that we don't have those impacts of the water or the land from these mines.
I think it was Luke Popovich who said that as long as the government and the government in Canada is funding the new, the new technology, that they're requiring for the CO2 and the sequestration of it, he says as long as the government's paying for it, it's not viable. Do you see a governmental role in the coal industry and in the coal cleaning industry going forward if the industry itself won't or can't?
I think that's happening now. I think that there are projects being funded by the State of Ohio Coal Development Authority, projects that OSU is doing, that Battelle is doing, that are being funded by partially by the State of Ohio to find ways to clean up coal, and that's been going on for a while, and it's. Unfortunately, it's not viable, and I think that we're getting to the point where we need to recognize that that it may be not practical to try to continue to clean coal, and that we have to look at other resources.
John in West Jefferson, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Fine, thank you. Go ahead.
I guess my question is for Trent. There was a caller on before, and basically, what he was saying was. Pretty much a gross exaggeration.
Is this the last caller?
That was the last caller.
Okay.
And
also.
I guess what concerns me is when, again, someone with supposed credibility like Trent would say that that guy was 100% correct, knowing full well that everything he was saying was not 100% correct.
Well, Jan, tell us what you disagree with.
Well, let's take the example. I mean, there were several, but... one example was, again, he was saying that he didn't go down through West Virginia anymore or even in Ohio on his way to Myrtle Beach because they'd leveled all the mountains. And I don't see that when I drive down through there.
I agree. I don't see that when I drive
again,
down through there.
And to say that he was 100% correct is not correct. Also, the fact that people are getting sick down there, I don't see that either down there. And
are you from there?
No, I mean, okay. I go down there and work down there, but I don't see people getting sick because of water and streams or anything like that. What most of the concern would be probably would be the fish or something like that, but I don't think the people are. But the other thing that concerns me, and again, I know there's a bias a little bit, and I can, you know, you can detect it in what you were saying, that, again, everyone would agree that we're at a CO2 tipping point. Well, and that's what this is all about. When you shut down coal, what they're trying to do is basically shut it down through CO2 regulations, which they know they can't meet, which is obvious by Luke's comments.
Well, John, we have to take off now, but thanks for your call. I'll just follow that up with, you know, reiteration with...
But I don't think everybody agrees that CO2 is... a serious problem right now. I don't believe everybody agrees that. I don't. And I'd say 50%. And if you look at polls, I don't think the majority of Americans believe that either. So to push it into CO2, now that's a conscious decision by the administration to basically control coal.
All right. John, thank you for your call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Well, coal's not going anywhere. soon. It is, what did you call it, a baseline?
Base load power.
It's preeminent. It's going to be here for a while. So Trent and I are staring at each other right now.
Well, again,
and
I think
we only have 30 seconds.
We got 30 seconds. Yeah. I say we need to start pushing for more energy efficiency and more renewables, no matter what they're doing in Washington about the regulations. We have the ability here in Ohio with efficiency and renewables if we keep those in line and we keep those standards moving. Unfortunately, Ohio is moving towards maybe repealing those with Senate Bill 58. So next time you pull out your turkey, you're going to be charged more for it. Thanks to that.
Trent Daugherty, thank you so much from the Ohio Environmental
Council.
Thanks for listening. All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.